feeling.
About what?
That we didn't do something.
Ah, now you feel that way because we left in such a hurry. We took care of everything. Believe me, we did.
Did you lock up?
Yeah.
Did you close the garage?
That's it. I forgot to close the garage, that's it.
No, that's not it.
What else could we be forgetting?
Kevin!
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's bonus Home Alone movie retrospective series.
I made my family disappear.
Hosted by Arnie.
I'm 10 years old. TV's my life.
Stuart.
Your Santa Claus is intoxicated.
And Justin.
If you need somebody to trust, it can be me.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and mildly objectionable language.
It's not even rated R. He's just being a jerk.
We hope you enjoy the show.
This is it. Don't get scared now.
Today we're discussing Home Alone 3, starring Alex D. Linz, directed by Raja Gosnell.
Nobody else matters.
This is the Now Playing co-host who slammed the toilet seat down on his thing again, Arnie.
Yeah, I think we all did. This is Stuart.
And this is Justin.
Happy December! I know it's been a few weeks since we've been back with Home Alone, and I just gotta ask you guys up front. You know, anybody can cover the Macaulay years. It takes a truly brave soul. It takes a dedication that Now Playing has to franchises, to follow them to the bottom. How much do you guys even know about what's next for you?
Nada. I think I remember hearing there was another Home Alone and Macaulay Culkin wasn't on board, and that was the last I thought about it.
Okay, so you knew there was a 3.
I knew there was a 3 that had Scarlett Johansson in it, because that had become kind of like notorious lore, was this was her first or one of her first films.
Okay.
And then I knew there was one that filmed outside your house, Stuart. We were on the phone together one night and you're like, what are all these lights? They're filming a Home Alone. So there's some other Home Alone. And then I know Disney Plus did Home Sweet Home Alone. But I couldn't tell you what number that was until we decided to do the retrospective series. I would have thought that was probably number 5.
Yeah, I know about this movie because I used to run a bad movie club. I have seen this movie in parts before. We definitely picked this. This was one of our choices because, yes, we just knew this is where it goes off the rails, right? It didn't take long. If our complaint last time was that they didn't try hard enough to be creative, they did everything the same, boy, do we get punished with getting what we wish for, right? They're really changing it up here.
Yeah, but I'm surprised, honestly, because I expected Home Alone 3 just to be a shameless cash grab, but somehow they got John Hughes back to write this?
This is what I'm talking about. This is why this is an amazing movie. This looks like the kind of shit that would get cranked out 20 years from now, like straight to tape, you know, like something we're going to watch next week. But this is done by the man who created it. Like, this is a self-injury. He can't complain some hack came in and took my baby away. He shot his baby. It's in the commercials. If you watch the trailers. Written by John Hughes, because no one would believe that if they watched the film.
I was unaware of it, and it completely shocked me sitting down for this. I was like, oh my God, is that John C. Hughes or?
Right.
What killed me is there are so many Facebook groups I'm in that just worship John Hughes. Like he is a god of cinema who could do no wrong, Breakfast Club, Weird Science, Ferris Bueller. From now on, I have a counterpoint to bring up in those discussions.
Yeah, it's, again, there's so much about this that's shocking. Yeah, seeing Scarlett, I didn't know that actually, Arnie, coming back to this. I had forgotten that detail. Yeah, Scarlett here. It's not just John Hughes coming back. They did get the editor. Raja Gosnell was someone that cut both Home Alone 1 and 2. And I guess they thought that if he knew how to do all of that pratfalls and stuff and make that footage work, he should get promoted as director. Now, Chris Columbus had better things to do. Stepmom, I think he was making. They promote the editor to the director's chair. He would go on to make things like the Scooby-Doo movies, live-action movies.
So he had success. I mean, people love those movies.
Do they?
Some people do. I'm not going to put myself among those people.
I love Scooby-Doo, and I've never watched them. I actually kind of refuse to watch them. They look so horrible.
The first Scooby-Doo is great. I'll say that.
Really?
Yeah. I'm going to stand by it. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about how John Hughes writing this film is akin to Axl Rose performing in a Guns N' Roses tribute band.
I think he did that, and the album was called Chinese Democracy.
I guess it should also be noted that they didn't bring back Macaulay. And that Macaulay, even if he wasn't, you know, at this point, what, 7 years beyond what he had been, too old for it, they probably could have, God knows, we would accept anything for the premise of this movie. They could have brought him back. But he was unpopular. It's just worth saying that nobody liked him at this point. He had a handful of movies that had all tanked. And by this point, he was kind of another poster kid for why you don't want little children to become stars and grow up too quickly in the Hollywood spotlight.
Yeah, his last film had been Richie Rich in 94, as I recall, and he was Richie Rich. It was perfectly cast. He was a very wealthy little boy, but yeah, it was not something that people were racing to hire him again.
Yeah, and just want to say, like, all those films that he made, he did like a crime caper with Ted Danson called Getting Even with Dad. The Page Master was some half-animated fantasy film. Good Son, he actually tried to be like a thriller where he kills people, like he's Chucky or something like that. None of them made as much money at the box office as Home Alone 3.
Oh.
As bad as this movie is, his box office track record is worse.
I mean, poor guy, right? Like, he was a cute kid, and then, like, they tried to have him on screen during puberty, and that's just never going to work out well for anybody.
Yeah, it's a bad recipe. I understand the seduction, and God knows when millions are rolling in, it's hard to say no. But yeah, he ends up estranged from his own father, and, you know, the acting success from that family is actually Kiernan. There are people in the Culkin family that are successful actors now, but they weren't the ones that were getting all the attention in the 90s. Now, I wouldn't have believed it. I looked at the box. I said, no fucking way. I went and I YouTubed it. And I watched the review, and it's true, man. It's true. Roger Ebert thumbs up the best of the trilogy. Thumbs down on Home Alone. Thumbs down on Home Alone 2. But he actually said they finally got a kid who can act, and they made a really exciting film, the best of the bunch.
Oh, Lordy. You know, I really respect Roger Ebert as a film critic. He's a great writer. I've loved his essays on films. But no one gets it right 100% of the time. We don't get it right 100% of the time. And we found Roger Ebert's one percenter.
Yeah. It's astounding, right? It almost feels like, you know, this can happen. You take so much shit for not liking the movie everyone else likes. You finally break down and say, okay, I like the new one. But you don't say that to Home Alone 3. Because no one likes Home Alone 3. I don't know what happened to this kid. This movie's reputation, I think, exists to be mocked by people on YouTube. There's almost no information, no commentary track. The director ain't talking, but you can find millions of people mocking this thing in their fun YouTube critical essays.
I didn't even know that. I had no idea that this had a meme quality to it because I, again, other than ScarJo being in it, I'd never even really heard of this film. I'd never heard people talk about this film. I've never gone looking, but nobody's ever come to me about it.
Yeah. Well, we're here now. Knock, knock, knock. That's me requesting you to give this plot summary, and we can get into Home Alone 3.
Poor 8-year-old Alex, played by Alex D. Linz, has the chicken pox, and right near Christmas, too. This means the young boy is forced to stay home alone while his older siblings go to school and his working parents have to go to work. While alone and bored, Alex uses his telescope to spy on his neighbors and notices a string of break-ins in the neighborhood. Like a good citizen, Alex calls 911, But when the police arrive, they find no burglars and nothing is missing from any houses. What Alex actually witnessed wasn't a group of ordinary thieves, but four internationally wanted criminals who were involved in the theft and smuggling of high-tech Air Force chips used to make missiles. They hid the chip in a toy car, but thanks to a mix-up at airport security, the toy car ended up in Alex's neighborhood. The criminals know it's in the neighborhood, but they don't know which house. And the house they seek is actually Alex's own. He'd been gifted the toy car for shoveling his neighbor's driveway. Alex finds the chip and contacts the Air Force, who initially don't believe the young boy is actually in possession of stolen tech. The criminals discover Alex has the chips and begin to infiltrate his house while he's home alone, but Alex has booby-trapped his house and the criminals find themselves frozen, bashed, and generally abused. Finally, the police arrive, joined by the Air Force. The criminals are apprehended, the stolen computer chips are returned to the Air Force, and Alex is given a hefty reward for returning the chips, as credits roll.
Now, I just want to remind you, in the late 90s, it was just a thing. We already covered the Die Hard franchise, but it was just how they sold thrillers. Die Hard on a bus at speed. Die Hard on the Air Force One. Like, you just plug that concept in, the John McClane formula, into everything. And by 1997, it is the brilliant idea to plug Die Hard on a Home Alone set. This is so dumbfounding that we're starting in Hong Kong with a mob boss wanting to get a microchip to North Korea.
Yeah, this feels like a Beverly Hills Cop Nyquil or something at this point.
Yeah, you can't believe when you see that junk in the Hong Kong harbor and all that, you're like, wait, is this Die Hard 4? You can't believe that this is the setup for this movie.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, the film quality used here is lower grade. Right from the get-go, you feel the lack of budget for this movie or care given to it. It feels like we've got this property, let's do something with it.
$30 million, it's the most expensive one of the bunch.
Good Lord.
But I know what you mean. It feels so cheap because everything here feels inauthentic. But again, these opening shots, the music, the four terrorists that we're going to see as they trudge through the airport, they all look like extras from a Die Hard film.
But the thing that shocked me is when the movie starts, it starts with the full 20th Century Fox fanfare. There's the abbreviated one they put on most movies, but then there's the full one with the ba-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, that they put on their big movies like Star Wars. And this.
Yeah. I mean, they put this out at Christmas. They thought it was going to do something. And again, it made 30 in the States, but 50 internationally. It made a profit. It's a big movie.
Well, we should say this one is a departure, right? This isn't a sequel. We're not even with the McAllisters anymore. This is a completely different family. The only thing that's the same is the concept and Chicago.
Yes, they're going to have criminals breaking into a house. But if we were complaining that that New York one was just cut and paste, no, I guess I never imagined that we would see four terrorists buy off a Silicon Valley employee and then put the microchip in a remote control car, because of course TSA is going to know what that is if they just walk on the plane with a microchip. They'll just stop them right there, gun them down.
Yeah, especially pre-9/11, I think you could pretty much get on board with a lot of things. But, you know, putting it in a toy car is a good way to hide a chip.
Stupid. This is so dumb. This is so bad, right? At the least, put it in a video game cartridge, which they already made that movie. It was called Cloak and Dagger with Henry Thomas 10 years before. But you know what I mean. Stupid as hell.
I mean, I'm not going to nitpick putting a chip in a car. I'm going to nitpick the fact that whatever bag they put it in is a bag that everybody has.
Parisian. Yes, everyone in San Francisco wants to be French. Who knew this?
I honestly was like, wait, I thought they were in Silicon Valley. Are they in Paris? Why has everybody got a Parisian bag?
That makes no sense to me that everyone is walking around with a bag in English that says Parisian. And this is the San Francisco airport flying to Chicago. The movie never goes to France. Doesn't even go to Europe. I don't know what the hell.
So it's also interesting that this is the era, once again, we've spoken about this before, of kids being into spy gadgets. There were toys at the time. This movie has a bunch of little gadgets. We get a camera and a glove, but it's also the beginning of that time. So everything's funnily and overly large, right? This microchip is the size of a loaf of bread that they're hiding in a remote control car.
Here's the thing. I feel like this movie wants to be like a Naked Gun style parody of spy movies, maybe Die Hard movies, but for an audience of 12-year-olds that are not allowed to see such fare. So you've literally created an audience of none. This movie is way too juvenile for adults to find funny. And yeah, kids, will they even know what Die Hard is? I guess you're right. Kids always like spy things. 5 years from now, Robert Rodriguez will make bank by creating that Spy Kids franchise. Maybe you could look at this as some kind of prototype, but no. When we have these terrorists bumbling through the airport, an old lady got the sack switched, and they can't catch her in the airport, but they have a glove that can take pictures of her taxi cab and find out from the cabbie what neighborhood they dropped her off in. This is just, I mean, you don't write this as a setup unless this is a joke, right? Unless this is some kind of parody of Die Hard movies.
And yet, I think of movies like Blank Check. There are these kid movies where the kids get involved in crime capers. I mean, John Hughes would kind of touch on some of that.
You know what? I haven't seen Blank Check to know what that movie is about. And again, I acknowledge that there are spy thrillers with kids in it, Cody Banks or something like that. I'm aware that there is a genre that exists to explore children as spies. But Home Alone is not that franchise. And what is shocking is that they've just really shit the bed right here. Like, it just tells you nothing that you liked about, nothing that I liked about that original is going to be here. We have jettisoned everything about coming of age, heartwarming, all of that is way gone, and we're in this Looney Tunes stupid-ass spy plot that, again, I would argue is missing the mark for maybe everyone, definitely adults.
I disagree. I think there's a target audience for this of kids. I definitely think that kids like to think of themselves in capers. Remember when we were kids, Stuart, we used to want to stop drug dealers and started a detective agency.
Yeah, I fully recognize that. I guess what I'm suggesting to you is if you were to make the sequel to E.T. and have Elliot become a spy, does that feel like a good idea to you?
I understand what you're saying. This may not be a great Home Alone movie, but that doesn't mean that it can't service an audience. It's just, this is aiming far, far younger than the first Home Alone, which was a family film and one that the three of us were able to get behind, Grinch though you are, Stuart.
Right.
And yet, this is aimed definitely at the preteen set. If you are 13 or above, this is not aimed at you. This is for young, young kids. And so that's a demographic shift because I think they tried to stay family audience with part two to less success. But I'm not going to say that there's no audience that could be served by this kind of a silly setup.
You love Home Alone. You're not offended by this. This doesn't hurt you to see something that you watch yearly turn into kiddie pulp.
Not at all, because it's so far removed from the Home Alone I know that I understand they're just bastardizing the name. Although, again, that John Hughes did this is astonishing.
Yeah.
Right. That doesn't impact you at all. You're just like, well, whatever. This is a kid's movie. I can't do that. I can't shrug this off. This shit is blowing my mind still.
I think it tarnishes Hughes' name more than the franchise, right? Like, I mean, to me, when Disney puts out a direct-to-DVD sequel to a very popular movie, I mean, you know, there's a Lion King 2 out there, right? They did that knowing it wasn't going to go on the big screen. It was literally just, hey, kids want to sit in front of the TV and watch this, so let's do it. That's what this feels like. But the things that don't add up is it was in theaters and John Hughes is attached. So that's in the stew pot as well.
That's why you should be mad, is because they didn't just say we're doing a direct-to-tape kiddie film. They're putting this out at Christmas time like all the other ones with the most money they've ever put into a Home Alone film. And telling people it's the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, you could tell me that this was written not as a Home Alone. This was written as whatever. I can't remember. This kid isn't Kevin. Not Kevin's big day home.
Yeah, he's not even home alone. Let's get to this. So the reason why the super spies can't find the house is because the cabbie told them it's the one place that doesn't have a driveway that's shoveled. And wouldn't you know it, little Alex works for that old lady. She got home, wasn't happy that her driveway wasn't shoveled. So she's making him do it at whatever time of night it is. And we're introduced to our Macaulay Culkin. Better than Macaulay Culkin? You going to back Ebert on this?
No, I'm going to say this kid is acceptable as far as child actors go, but he's hard-pressed to carry a film on his tiny shoulders. I mean, Macaulay, you get to see how special Macaulay is when you see Alex D. Linz here. And I don't want to unnecessarily hate on Alex D. Linz. He's a very young child, and we've said many times on this podcast that child actors are very dependent on their directors, and a good child actor can often be credited to the director and a bad child actor as well. Maybe Alex Linz's problem here is a mediocre director, but I find him to be a mediocre actor at best and not any of the charisma of a Macaulay Culkin.
That's about the line I'd walk to. I mean, he's not offensive. I mean, at that age, little boys can be very, very obnoxious, and you put him in a movie like this, it could have been way over the top, and I feel like he restrains, you know, at least what's on screen. I'm getting a little bit of Nicholas from Eight is Enough type of vibe off of him. Maybe it's just the hair.
Deep cut.
Good call.
Yeah. Here's what I would say. Yeah, I don't think it's, I'll call the problem Alex and not Alex D. Linz. I don't think it's the actor. I think it's the way it's conceived. But in the Home Alone original, there was a story arc, right? Like, this was a kid that hadn't done anything for himself and wished himself into this predicament where he had to grow up. What is Alex? What does, quote, staying home alone do for him? I don't even think he is home alone, but what is he going to know that he didn't already by going through this?
Yeah, and I think these are questions that we're not going to be able to answer, right? Because I think that's what we're saying is that this movie looks at the first one and says, scrub anything that kids' eyes will glaze over during the movie, and let's up everything else. Let's up the gadgets, let's up the spills, let's up all of it. Why is his brother and sister jerky to him? We don't know. Just because. He's the little one.
Yeah. Scarlett Johansson's, yeah, only role here. She seems to be cheating on her math test. She's writing some kind of computations on the soles of her feet. And she's, yeah, saying horrible things as, I keep wanting to call him Buzz, but Stan is the brother, like, kills his pet grasshopper. And they've given this kid all these Pee Wee Herman contraptions and all these pets, mice that run around, grasshoppers, all of that, like a whole Dr. Doolittle thing going on.
Yeah, the parents are very tolerant, given that they have two terrors plus all these animals living under their roof. Although, Justin, you have two children and ferrets and other animals, so I guess you can relate.
Yeah, to a certain degree. I mean, I haven't had to defend my home from spies yet, but maybe the ferrets will come in handy then. I'll have to consult Beastmaster for that, though. So did you guys recognize the actress playing the mom here? I know she's had quite a career and acted in a lot of stuff, but I think guys our age would recognize her most from one particular movie.
No, I have no idea.
I did not, and I didn't look her up. Who is she?
She is Jake Ryan's girlfriend from 16 Candles.
Oh, a John Hughes connection.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean a lot to me. I don't remember 16 Candles that well. I watched it once, really late, well beyond the 80s.
Incredibly racist.
Yeah, no, I don't remember liking it. Just add to that. I don't think it's the classic people remember it to be, but was she a big part? Was she the babe or something?
Yeah, she was the babe of the hot guy, Jake Ryan, and, you know, Molly Ringwald's character's trying to get with Jake Ryan, and so she's the model of perfection to a high school girl. A little shower scene in there, too, so that's always nice for a prepubescent boy growing up.
Yeah, what's for the parents to learn? They seem functional, happy, just overworked. Like, they don't make time for their child, maybe? Although she's trying to work from home.
Which was not a thing, I want to add, in 1997. Work from home was really not something that existed. I thought it was very futuristic to see her working on a laptop and having her papers spread around her living room and trying to use her home phone. That's something that we would all take for granted today, but back then, working from home just meant you were not going to work. And would you leave an 8-year-old alone? That's where I tried to remember. I think my mom left me alone for a couple of hours at a time when I was 8, third grade, but I wouldn't have been left alone all day. Absolutely not. There would have been somebody in the house to supervise.
And indeed, they call this neighbor, this Mrs. Hess, to come over, and, you know, she'll sort of factor into the later part of this plot, but I don't know what they're getting at. It seems to me that the genius idea was, what would be great about doing a sequel to Home Alone is if we double the crooks and have 50 more minutes of the slapstick. The ratio is way off. We don't care about the family. We don't care about the sentimentality, the development. It's not even Christmas.
It is Christmas.
No, it's not. They say, what's the date? January 8th. They still have their Christmas shit up, but it is not Christmas.
Okay, because they do talk about Christmas decorations, so I thought it was still Christmas.
Yeah, people just aren't taking them down, which, you know, maybe. January 8th? I don't know. But yeah, that's how unsentimental this movie is. It's a Christmas movie where Christmas is already past and no one's playing with their toys.
I was wondering why they weren't on Christmas break with all the wreaths around. I actually did get chicken pox. I was in high school, but it was at Christmas break. It was the worst time to get it ever, is right at Christmas break. I didn't even get to miss much school. I just had to suck it up, have red spots and itches over the holidays. So I was thinking about Alex's timing here. I figured this was early December. I didn't catch that they said it was January. I guess he's back in school from the holidays then.
I mean, I suppose you give a kid chickenpox for a reason other than just he's sick, right? I mean, it never comes back. I thought maybe he would infect one of the bad guys or something, right?
He does. At the very end, you see all four of them have the chickenpox.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's an end stinger. But I wanted to say, it's a joke that they don't really want to play because they don't want their lead actor actually to have welts all over his face, and they would have to deal with that in all the promotion and advertising. They're like these little tiny red dots that kind of come and go. And they're like, he has one scene where he doesn't quite do the Macaulay Culkin cheek slap, you know, ah, but like they have one scene of him at the bathroom mirror looking at these fake red dots. And then the fact that he's ill with chicken pox, I don't know. Is he even ill? Does he feel bad? It doesn't seem like it.
No, I remember when I had chicken pox, there was a fever. There was general malaise. The itching was not something you were just able to ignore. Here, yeah, it's like he forgets he has chicken pox most of the time.
Yeah, hence why I did too. You know, I forgot that was the reason he was home.
Right, yeah. So he's home for bogus reasons after Christmas, with parents that are pretty nearby, can be around, are on hand. It is not the same stakes at all. And the fact that these are four international terrorists trying to get a microchip to North Korea to blow us all up is an entirely different movie. Like, this is really, 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 really bad writing.
Yeah, I mean, mom has to go into work a few times. Dad, I remember, does take a business trip. He does leave town.
Later. Yeah, the second day.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just frame. So what's going to happen? Of course, you got to have the crooks breaking in. They know it's this one block, but they, you know, the cabbie knew where the general neighborhood, but didn't have the exact address. And so they're going to rent a house under false pretenses. The real head scratcher here is they steal a dog from the neighborhood and then walk the dog around the neighborhood to try and blend into the neighborhood.
Thank you. I thought I missed something.
No.
Why did they steal a neighborhood dog?
It's so stupid. This movie hurts you.
I couldn't understand this either. I thought for sure this would come back to bite them, that one of the neighbors would be like, why was my dog not in the yard?
Yeah, when the mom almost runs her over, I thought she'd recognize the dog. But apparently it's just, the dog never does anything. I don't even know why. She could jog around the neighborhood without a dog. They don't need the dog as a cover.
She has a fake baby.
I think they just want to have animal reaction shots. Because they will just have, you know, mice looking through telescopes and seeing cats on television and doing spit takes. And yeah, the cops break into a house at one point with guns pointed and the dog does a spit take. Like, it's that kind of movie. Just cut to the animal shot.
Yeah, you're right. It is literally just as crass as kids like animals, let's get animals in here.
Yeah, with a parrot, you know, all of it. It's a nightmare. But okay, so yes, now they're going house to house during the day because everyone will be, you know, it's the suburbs. No one's home, theoretically, except Mrs. Hess, and she has something to do. And they'll go house to house trying to find this Parisian bag with the toy car, with the microchip they can give to North Korea.
Yeah, it's a very loose plot. The thought of these four international thieves that are working for millions of dollars decide to break into 14 houses and search them all for the specific bag, assuming the bag wasn't even thrown away, looking for a remote control car, assuming the car wasn't thrown away when somebody gets home and realizes this isn't my luggage.
What should happen is Peter, the head of this, should just take his gun and shoot all three of these people and then just go back to the guy he bought it off of, shoot him, and get another microchip. This is so bad.
I'm sorry, there's an even easier solution than that. Take the bag you do have to the person who has your bag and say, hey, we got these mixed up at the airport. Yes. Here's your bread. Can I have my bag?
Mrs. Hess is very upset about not having her baguettes. You're right. She would have happily. She only gives that car to Alex because she has to pay him with something and she doesn't want to give him money. So, yes, she didn't want what they had and that should have been worked out. You're right.
More of an issue for Delta than spies, but it is what it is.
Well, I mean, it happened at security. It's not like the airline screwed up. But yeah, the fact that they're going to try to break into 14 houses is ridiculous, but I suppose it's a change of pace. You want somebody to do a home invasion in a Home Alone film, and so this is different than just burglaring, which is what we had the first two films. And it raises the stakes. It's bigger. It's sillier. It's worse. Nowhere near what the first Home Alone film had in terms of heart. But we're going to get Alex seeing them because he's a creeper with a telescope. They don't make it as creepy as it is. But if you're in a small neighborhood looking in people's windows with a telescope, that's kind of pervy.
That was my next thing. So, okay, forget all of the problems I'm having with this setup. Let's just get into this. Why is Alex involved? Does he know all of his neighbors? Is he able to identify someone in the window as not being belonging to that house? Why, if he is sick with chickenpox, is he looking in a telescope at all? I think they try to set up that he pranks Hess, that she's a mean old woman and he likes to change her remote control. And they have a bit where he turns it to a salacious music video and she kind of gets aroused.
A Jamie Foxx music video, Stuart. Jamie
what?
Foxx.
Jamie Foxx, Oscar-winning actor Jamie Foxx?
Yes. He had a music career in the 90s.
Don't make me watch this movie again. Now I have to go back. Really? That's awesome. You mean that wasn't done as a joke? That's really a Jamie Foxx music video? All those oiled bodies writhing? Oh, wow. Okay, this movie just got better, or worse, I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, right, another level of laziness, right? In the original Home Alone, they made a fake movie to grab sound bites from.
I just assumed it had to be a fake music video. No one would put that music out, except Jamie Foxx, apparently. So, yeah, eventually, they go through two houses. They do the same bit twice. Kid calls 911, they come, guns a-blazing. They do trick shots where the thieves, like, drive by and pick up the people without a cut. So they just, like, disappear from the sidewalk. And the cops think that this kid is lying and not taking 911 seriously. 2 days of that.
Did either of you recognize the cop, the first cop who has to give Alex a talking to for pranking 911?
Yeah, it's the janitor from Scrubs.
Yep, we talked about him when we reviewed The Fugitive earlier this year. He had a minor role in The Fugitive, which was worked into his role on Scrubs. The actor is Neil Richard Flynn. But yeah, primarily known as the janitor from Scrubs. I was happy to see him. It was always a fun presence.
Fun here? I didn't even notice this character. It's only because you recognize the character that you would remember this scene or what transpired.
When you know nothing and you're not interested in what's going on, you take your jollies where you can get them, and I get mine from Neil Richard Flynn being in this movie, okay?
Okay, yeah, I get it.
Him and ScarJo are my two go-tos in this film.
And ScarJo, again, she's just pure on mean. Do they have a turn at the end? Are they ever redeemed? I guess they kind of come to respect Alex, that they're bullying him. You know, after 2 days of calling the cops, they're telling him cops are never going to come to your rescue again, permanent record, doing what older siblings do, bullying him, looking awful.
Yeah, they have a little bit of a turn where they get worried about him at the end when they find out that there really are international criminals after him, but it's a very brief turn for some minor characters. You know, when I knew Scarlett Johansson was in this, I kind of thought she might be a partner in crime just because I associate her with larger roles. But no, she's nothing but the pesky sister here with maybe a combined 5 minutes of screen time.
I don't think she has more than a minute, honestly. I don't know what... Again, you should probably cut her. It should just probably be the older brother. I don't know why you need two older siblings. But why do you need four crooks? I mean, what are they getting by having this whole... It feels like a Die Hard movie. The thing I can go to, there's like the techie, there's the guy with the disguises, there's the femme fatale, and then there's the ringleader. They have the archetypes of a terrorist organization from a Die Hard movie. But once we get the pratfalls going, are any of them great at this? I feel like the best one is Peter, because he's the only one that's not mugging. He's the only one that doesn't try to do big eyes, Ernest Jim Varney kind of crap.
You know, I actually didn't mind the earnest kind of crap, as you called it. I wanted this to go big and cartoony if this is the plot. And so the bigger they go, I kept getting Duffy, if you remember Duff from MTV and Dumb and Dumber. I was getting kind of a Duff vibe off of Alice.
Is that meaning like you're liking this? Arnie, I'm actually troubled right now by how nonchalant you are about how bad this movie is.
I am rolling with it as children's entertainment.
Why? Why are you rolling with this? You love Home Alone. This is like someone breaking your toy and then telling you to suck it up.
I think it may be because I outgrew the toy and this is aimed at very young children. This is not aimed at me in any way. I can't be offended by this. I mean, I have seen Blank Check, and I have seen a lot of movies with little kids going up against gangsters and terrorists and trying to be Spielberg, and this feels like one of them. What's surprising me about this film is how much I'm not hating it as I watch it.
I'm stunned by that, and this is, again, we've reviewed Adventures in Babysitting. Yes, you can do this scenario, and I roll with it and think it's a good movie. This is a terrible version of that movie. Terrible. And you're acting like, eh, six-year-olds will watch it.
For me, it's the timing. If I had seen this at the time, I would probably be more offended. But given all this time later, I mean, I know what Macaulay Culkin's up to nowadays. He's in his 40s. Like, there's really not much lilt left in that rose. I don't know how offended I can be for a movie that came out 25 years ago.
Again, yes, it didn't take your money, so to speak. You didn't line up for it. You weren't tricked in 1997 to go to the movie theater. But I think, as we are all fans of that original, we should all be relatively indignant that they have passed this off as an acceptable third chapter. That is absolutely unacceptable. Hilarious. Again, the fact that they thought they could go Die Hard in a Home Alone movie with a bunch of animals. I mean, this is like some pitch meeting gone to hell.
Well, your original question, Stuart, was about these spies, these criminals. And I'll say this, not one of them comes up to even half the level of Pesci or Stern. Those guys played their parts perfectly. And no one here is even half the actor of those guys. Like, any of their pratfalls don't feel as funny. None of their muggings to the cameras feel as earned. It all is just going through the motions.
I did recognize one of them. I don't know who the janitor of Scrubs was, but one of these guys, his character's name is Burton. He was Lenny Van Doen. He's on Twin Peaks, Arnie, if you remember the shut-in that Laura brought Meals and Wheels to.
Thank you. It was killing me. I'm like, I know that guy from something, and I didn't know what it was. Yeah, okay, Twin Peaks.
Yeah, he's sort of their techie, and then they have this guy that's like, Earl is supposed to be the one that's wearing disguises, I guess like a Mission Impossible thing. You're not supposed to recognize him as an old man with a cane. Again, why are they running up and down the streets? I don't even know what's going on here. Why they need all this subterfuge to do this. But Yeah, because they have high-tech devices. They can just point towards door locks and they snap open. Like, again, it's just so that they can have these funny bits where suddenly the woman's walking the dog and the kid can get a dog whistle and make her dragged into the bushes spitting up leaves. Would Joe Pesci do this? Yes, but that was only 20 minutes of Home Alone. And this is an hour and 40 minute movie that pretty much starts and finishes with people spitting up leaves and doing spit takes.
Yeah, that's definitely a miscalculation. Again, I think Home Alone, I was ready for the antics when they came, but they didn't overstay their welcome. And here, yeah, these terrorists, if this is Die Hard, there's no Hans Gruber among them. I don't feel any of them are competent, especially with this plan. Again, Justin, you poked the biggest hole in this balloon of just say, I'm returning your bag. So here, I think it really starts to go downhill for me when Alex is sending over the RC car that they want. He's using it as a spy tool with a video camera on top. And video cameras used to have tapes in them, so he had to put a tape in this on a camera. And then he's doing this to prove there really are people breaking into houses, because he's called the cops twice. The cops don't believe him anymore. And so he's going to film them breaking in. And that leads to quite a chase of them falling all over each other to try to catch this RC car. Instead of just doing the obvious thing, which is watch where the RC car goes and then go there.
I mean, this thing is eternal. I mean, this might be 15 minutes of the movie, this car chase, if that's what we're calling it.
Yeah, I mean, it's into a house. He gets caught outside of the house and he hands it over to the girl spy and told her to hold it. And it gets away from her like it's a rabid raccoon or something. It's a car. Just hold on to it. It's not going to roll up your body.
And yes, this is the kind of thing that they wouldn't even do this long in a kid's show. You're right. This would be on Nickelodeon. You can't do this on television. They'd have stupid stuff like this. It wouldn't go on this long. You wouldn't give this much time for this much pratfalling from these amateurs. You just wouldn't. I don't know why they didn't need a B plot. You know what I mean? Okay, you made a stupid spy plot. Shouldn't the kid have something with his brother or his mother or his dad? Shouldn't there be a human family story to kind of give a counterbalance?
You mean the Home Alone part of the Home Alone movie?
Yeah. The closest they get is Mrs. Hess, you know, that they start at such odds that she's rude to him and don't scratch yourself in front of a lady and all of this. And then they have this real weird moment where the thieves figure out it's the kid. They know after this scene and they like strap her to a chair and leave the door open to kill her from the cold. And I swear to God, the Alice character is making like moves on her or something. It's like seductive the way she's very handsy with this old lady in a way that makes me feel like lesbian evil spy or something.
I didn't get that vibe. She does get rather up close and personal. I mean, they put their faces right next to each other as she says she's going to kill her, but
she's really enjoying tying this woman up. That's all I'm saying. And yeah, so now the story is, I guess Alex needs to save her life. I don't think he knows that this is going on, but she was supposed to come over to babysit and didn't show up. And now the bad guys are all breaking in.
Yeah, because we had the montage of Alex getting the house ready.
We had like 5 montages. There's a ton of those. But yes, 53 minutes into an hour and 40 minute movie, they're starting with that.
And we're getting to see all the traps he's setting up. And I gotta say, this Alex kid, he's gonna make one hell of a contractor when he gets older, because he's doing stuff I don't have the gumption or know how to do. He's got a tractor to move a giant trampoline. He's removing floorboards. I don't even know how to remove floorboards. I'd probably end up causing more damage than anything to the house. And yet he's unscrewing them and pulling them right up. I mean, he's doing some major remodeling on the fast here. And he's taking up a diving board. Do you have any idea how much anxiety I even had about the screws on my diving board when I owned a swimming pool on my house? I need a professional to screw that thing into concrete. And here's Alex, the 8-year-old, just moving the diving board to another place to make it look like the pool is not where the pool is. I mean, this kid is talented. I was rather impressed.
Yeah, doing all this in cold January weather too, right? Like, not going to get frostbite or anything.
With chickenpox.
Right, with chickenpox. Messing around with electricity. He made an electric fence.
Well, they already tried to establish him as someone that fed the fish with a giant mechanical arm, and that he already had some of this know-how. How he comes by it is just because, yes, he's just a magic kid that can do that. I know a Home Alone sequel has to do this. It was, I'm just going to point out, my least favorite part of Home Alone that they had to do this. I even question, could they make that movie without that part of it? And you guys voted that down. So they have to do some of this, but is it funny to do 50 minutes of this? I think that's a huge, huge mistake on their part to have so much of it. Half an hour, okay. I mean, I'll even give you that. 50 minutes is torture to the audience. I would have rather gone through some of these traps than sat through this movie.
Yeah, I think that's the conceit that we've already talked about here, is that they made the decision early on that they're not going for all audiences here. They are aiming this directly at kids, so they're giving more of what the kids want to see.
Okay, but do kids want to sit through 50 minutes of this? I would guess no. I would guess that if you sat a kid in front of the TV and had them watch slapstick, by 30 minutes, they would be getting up and wanting to do something else. Because seeing that much floorboards flipping, fall down the dumbwaiter, into the icy pool crap, it's numbing.
It does become a lot of nothingness. I'm surprised because we see him set up that swimming pool. It is forever before somebody falls in that swimming pool. I'm like shocked that they take so long to get to it. There's yes. So much with these traps. Each one spends so long. And then some things happen that aren't even traps. Like the female spy, I guess her pants are just too tight. She bends over and her pants rip open for no apparent reason. I mean, this humor would probably play to single-digit age children. I'm not laughing at it. I'm merely letting it roll over me as this is the audience they're playing to.
It is, and that's unfortunate. It's a terrible miscalculation. And I would also add, they're not serving that audience by letting it go on this long. Okay, how about two things with the parent? All right, let's go crazy. Three things with the parent saying something wacky, writing on the thing. But the thing just keeps popping up, and like they use it to like make prank phone calls. They try to do the thing like they did with the old movie, only with a parrot, of repeating things, and the criminals think someone's in the house and they're in trouble. Again, by the end of it, I kid you not, the parrot is riding around on a weaponized toy car into a doghouse to blow up the villain. I'm like, this is so bad.
The thing that creeps me out is when Alex has taken his older brother's sexy poster and made it a standee and put it in the shower. And the criminals, again, international criminals who are getting paid millions of dollars for these computer chips, decides to be a perv and open the shower on whatever sexy girl he thinks happens to be in that shower. And then, of course, it's the poster and the parrot.
Yeah, you know what? But you could do that. You could be judicious, pick a few of these really stupid things. And who knows? A lot of people might laugh because it's so stupid. Sometimes you get a reaction out of that. But you fill a movie with so stupid, I guarantee you, by the end of it, no one is laughing. Everyone wants this to be over. Yeah, you can have the parrot singing Bad, Bad Leroy Brown while a creeper creeps up on a standee in a bathroom shower, if that's your jam. But again, the 50 minutes is unforgivable. And there's so much parrot. And when it's not a parrot, it's a mouse popping out of a guy's crotch. I can't stand this movie.
Yeah, the animals are a little bit much, and I could use less of this too. I'll admit, I checked the time remaining on this film a few times as we entered this very long climax.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. When the montage to protect his house is at the 50-minute mark, that is 50 minutes until this thing is over. But let's just cut to the end, because I got nothing to say about the pratfalls. If you want to talk about the pratfalls, something that tickled your funny bone, go for it.
All I'll say is, much like the other Home Alone films, some of this stuff would have killed them. The barbells landing on their skulls would have concussed them.
And is that funny? Is it funny that these people almost die? Because they do play with real guns. There's a moment where Peter is like, I'm going to go back and whack the person I think, is in the house. There's a threat of real danger here. Sometimes. And then sometimes the gun ends up being a bubble gun. And they go, see, no big deal.
Yeah, no, I wanted to bring that up too. Because for as child-aimed as this movie is, for whatever reason, they brought in the threat of real guns. These people are all running around the house with loaded guns and silencers.
Yeah, because they're international killers that belong in a Die Hard movie. And you don't have an 8-year-old pitted against them unless you're doing something really subversive and clever, which we all admit that they are not doing. They are playing to the lowest common denominator, the lowest age group. And this is not a G-rated movie. That's the problem. You made G-rated entertainment that is, yeah, filled with violence that is wince-inducing and shows glorification of guns to children.
Yeah, the violence alone makes this PG, because if you show this at G-rated, kids may not understand you actually can't do this and not harm people. You've got to show this to a semi-sophisticated child who knows what you do on screen is not what you emulate in real life.
But in the end, the FBI has been looking for this team forever. They're still in San Francisco, and fortunately, Alex, before the 50-minute climax, decided to just open up the remote control car for no apparent reason that I can figure out, find the microchip, analyze the microchip, because it couldn't just be a microchip for a toy car, and then call the Navy or something, and that guy's going to look up the serial number, and it's going to get back to the FBI that they need to bring a whole team, because there's no FBI agents in Chicago. They got to fly in through the storm from San Francisco to have a wacky chase, to go to the high school first to pick up the mom and the siblings before they get to the house. What the fuck? Seriously, what the fuck? This is John Hughes?
When I add to that, Alex also assesses the situation. When he finds that microchip, he's like, oh, they must not be after the car. They must be after this.
Yeah, he waggles it at them several times, like, hey, you looking for this? Much like Kevin did in the first Home Alone.
They should have never gone microchip, right? The whole idea that, what, if it gets to North Korea, what, this ends in nukes? What is even going on here? This movie is bug nuts. It is off the rails. It is terrible. But yes, so the FBI rides in at the last minute. They kind of do what they did before of, like, Kevin gets caught, but there's no, Mrs. Hess doesn't save him, right? Like, the thing to do would be to have the old person that he was scared of come to his defense, like they did in the original. But she's still tied up and cold and passed out in the chair, and Alex just pulls a bubble gun, and he runs away.
Yeah, I mean, the only character arc here is that the older people end up being forced to believe Alex. You know, they thought he was making prank calls to the cops. Turns out, nope, he's not just crazy. There really are international spies in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this stupid plot is real, and we're all expected to swallow it. And Dad's going to come home. The end stinger joke is Dad came home with another remote control car that the parrot and the mouse are going to ride around in.
Yeah, the dad was non-entity in this film, and that he returns home at the end. I think one of the arcs, though, is ScarJo and the brother have come to respect young Alex because he got a big reward for returning the chip.
Funny that, because I have less respect for Scarlett Johansson after watching this movie, but yes, I suppose.
Well, and also, what a shitty lesson for kids. Hey, you're only as valuable as the money you can bring to the table.
Right. I don't need this car, Dad. I am a millionaire now. I'm Richie Rich because he gets like six figures for catching these crooks. Let's wrap this one up. I'm really curious. Are you going to give this a green arrow, Arnie?
You're going to be in suspense while I ask Justin Stewart, do you recommend Home Alone 3? Justin.
You know, making the third installment of any movie is never an easy task, right? And this one took all the ingredients from the first two and got rid of anything that was healthy for you. Got rid of any of the proteins, got rid of anything. And we're just left with a bowl of chocolate chips and marshmallows at the end, right? And it plays like a fever dream for an 8-year-old. And I can't imagine anybody over the age of 9 having anything good to say about this movie.
Roger Ebert, you mean?
Yeah, Roger Ebert, who apparently owed money to John Hughes, and this is how he got out of it.
Right, yeah, that's probably it. I think you're onto it.
But yeah, I mean, there's not much to say here. It was a swing and a miss, and it shouldn't be part of the Home Alone lore. Because it's not. It's not the same family. It's not continuing the McAllister family. It's not even a kid home alone. It was home unsupervised for a couple hours a day.
Right. With very attentive parents that are loving and trust him and are never mad at him.
Yeah, this movie could have very easily just been a direct-to-video thing. And the fact that John Hughes wrote this is mind-boggling. To me, it tarnishes John Hughes more than it tarnishes the Home Alone series. Because this can just easily be forgotten as part of Home Alone. And yeah, I mean, Arnie, you said it before. You want to remember John Hughes as what of a genius or a guy who wrote all these great things. But this is a big brown stain. And it just, it hurts for me to sit here and not recommend something that he sat down and penned. So yeah, sorry, Home Alone. But you know what I am going to do? I'm going to try to start an internet rumor with a screenshot from this movie with ScarJo and this Alex kid and say that this is when Colin Jost and Scarlett met as kids. Because this little kid looks like a miniature Colin Jost.
Yes, it does. Stuart?
A textbook manual on how to jump a shark, right? Like, if you want to know how to totally get it wrong in a sequel. The only step they missed was they didn't cast Hulk Hogan as one of the terrorists. But, like, everything else they did was so bad. Like, this is a Hulk Hogan movie. Santa with missiles is what this should have been called. Everything I loved about the original completely decimated. Not just not here. Murdered in front of you. The childish, wry observation of life are just get savagely killed by a parrot who just wants to scream vulgarities and ride around on a toy car while a mouse pops out of a guy's dick. It's just, it's so bad, I can't understand. Yes, look, I get it, Roger Ebert. Some very small children may prefer a movie that is just nothing but silliness, butt jokes, and slapstick for 90 minutes, but I bet you they don't even sit through it. I bet you everyone that tries to get through Home Alone 3 is going to be on the edge of their seat, fiddling, pulling out their phone, unable to enjoy it. Because they didn't make a family film. They should have aspired to that. There's nothing here for the older siblings, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa. Well, maybe if grandpa likes octogenarian bondage, maybe that scene with Mrs. Hess might do something for him. Lingering shots of her being tied down. But beyond that, this is very empty of adult entertainment. And yes, I want to hit the same note that I heard you say, Justin, of that I would expect them to get to this at some point in the way that sequels go, in the chain. Eventually, Uwe Boll gets the sequel or makes the ripoff, and you wind up with this. But that this is a self-inflicted injury from the creator, that John Hughes said, this is what I want the series to do next. You can't blame this on Hollywood execs or like crass marketing or any. This is, again, this is the man that got an honorary Oscar for his understanding of young people. And he said, go this way. It's why I recommend that you see this movie. I'm not going to go by my typical scale. I think we all know that after the first movie, they're bad movies. It's just what kind of bad movie are they going to be? Brown Arrow movies, I'm going to call those fruitcakes? Or are they lumps of coal? Are they just terrible things you shouldn't do? I think you have to. If you love Home Alone, you have to hate watch Home Alone 3. Unless you're Arnie, it will just send you to the ceiling with how bastardized it takes a beloved property. Such a travesty.
And I think I said, the biggest shock for me about Home Alone 3 is how much I didn't hate it the way I thought I would. I came in with the lowest of expectations and just wanting to do anything but watch Home Alone 3, expecting the absolute worst of Dreck, not even knowing that this was a theatrical hit, having no idea that John Hughes wrote it, just knowing that Home Alone 3 through 6, they all sound like bad ideas that we're going to be watching. And so coming to this, I expected utter pain, and yet, honestly, I found that I thought this one more hit the mark for what it was trying to do than Part 2 did. I like this movie better than Home Alone 2.
Whoa.
Wow. I'm so offended. Like, it is like a stealth missile with a microchip that you can't knock it down with hitting my heart.
Now, do I recommend this movie? Hell no. It is not a recommendable movie.
Too late. You've already said too many nice things. You did. You did, sir. You just said it was better than Home Alone 2.
And it is.
It is not.
Nothing here offends me the way the pigeon lady offends me in Home Alone 2. I think some kids will enjoy this movie, but I didn't enjoy this movie. It's a not recommend. It doesn't hold a candle to the original Home Alone as far as appeal, humor, inventiveness, heart, and just the simple liking of your main character, which Kevin won me over in that first Home Alone. And here, Alex, whatever. I don't dislike Alex, but I certainly am not rooting for Alex this whole film. And he does make questionable choices along the way. No, it's a not recommend, but if all the rest of the Home Alone movies are this good, then I'm not going to be in utter torture. I'm not going to wish I had dumbbells dropped on my head instead of watching the next three films.
Okay, so you hate children, is what I think I heard from that review. Kids will like this. I mean, oh my God, if you gave me this movie and I was a child, I would not like you. That's just terrible.
This is basically like finding out that you're okay with the store brand Oreos instead of actual Oreos.
Yeah, Hydrox. You gave me Hydrox and said it's just as good as any other cookie. No, if this, again, I would actually say this is the new watermark. I doubt that this franchise will ever hit this low. It can't. This is so stupid. Anything that they try to do will be better than this. John Hughes came up with the worst sequel.
I think it can get much, much worse. Next week, we're discussing A Wonderful World of Disney made for TV movie.
Well, shit, you're calling my bluff.
Oops.
I didn't say they'd be good. I think you heard me say they're all going to be bad, but will we, like, hate watching them is why I'm here. Will I be eating fruitcake, or will I be stuck with a lump of coal in my stock?
The only thing I know about part four is French Stewart.
Oof.
Oh, boy. That is bad. That is not a good sign. I will say that. I have seen the Inspector Gadgets with French Stewart. Her Inspector Gadget. I can't remember if there was more than one, but I saw one.
No. Inspector Gadget, excuse me, sir, is Matthew Broderick. Inspector Gadget 2 is French Stewart. You go to French Stewart when Matthew Broderick doesn't return your phone calls.
Jim Varney calls off, too.
Right. Hulk Hogan is busy doing other things. It's time to bring in French Stewart. Oh, boy. You're right. You're calling my bluff. Maybe it will get worse. We'll have to see.
So thank you for your support of Now Playing. We know during the holidays, money can be tight, and that you chose to devote some of it to keeping our show going means the world to us. Thank you. You are our fruitcake. You are definitely not a lump of coal in our stocking, you Now Playing supporters. And Justin Stewart, thank you for joining me. Until next time, Merry Christmas, you filthy animal, and a Happy New Year.
What kind of hotel allows a child to check in alone?
The boy had a very convincing story.
What kind of idiots do you have working here?
The finest in New York.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
A lot of action around here today, huh?
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Never let your emotions get the best of you. You weren't paying attention. You should have been more vigilant.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
I believe you, but my Tommy gun don't.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. And a Happy New Year.